Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome back to In the Spotlight here on Money FM 89.3. And yes, we will be talking about inflation once again, and very ever-present across many economies, including here in Singapore, that has caused many monetary policymakers to react, including the Monetary Authority of Singapore, which introduced not just one, but two tightening measures to help the Singapore dollar rise and possibly, in theory, combat some of these rising and persistent inflationary pressures. But what does this mean for the economy? Will this actually be effective? And how does this stand against the inflationary experiences across the ASEAN? Well, today on In the Spotlight, we are pleased to be joined by Michelle Jamrisco, the senior Asia economy reporter for Bloomberg, to talk to us about what she's been tracking and some of the latest developments with regards to inflation that has been stickier than we expected in the region. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm glad to hear you and your loved ones are still safe and in good health during these times. And welcome to the show. Hope you had a great Easter weekend.
Yeah, good to be here. Likewise, hope it was good for you too.
Absolutely, it was indeed. But you know, I think one thing that's really stayed in the mind, in the forefront of everyone's mind, is really these inflationary pressures that we've seen, and also caused the MAS to act in a rather hawkish way. Now, everyone was expecting them to actually be quite hawkish at Thursday's policy statement, but that one-two punch with regards to tweaking the Singapore dollar's policy settings may have taken some by surprise. Help us understand just how hawkish the MAS has been recently as compared to some of their previous statements and cycles.
Well, you're right. And we were very excited about this meeting because we knew it was going to be a little bit more exciting than usual. Even MAS is always kind of a quirky central bank, and for reasons of using their currency band rather than the interest rates. But this time in our survey ahead of the report, just to give you a sense, I mean, there was no real consensus as to which of the three tools they would use. And while the tools that they did end up using were, guessed by a few analysts in our survey, it was still a little bit unusual. And as you said, it was a little more hawkish than people expected. So I think, you know, it's important to keep in mind, to answer your question about recent history, the MAS only has twice yearly scheduled meetings. And any central banker around the world will tell you they'd like to avoid unplanned meetings if they can, as those tend to be unsettling for the markets. Mm-hmm. They're usually to address emergencies. The MAS did have a surprise meeting in January where they tightened. And that was also intended to head off these inflation risks. That was a rare off-cycle decision. So if you don't count March 2020 at the start of COVID, when they moved up their meeting by a few days, the last time they did that sort of surprise meeting was 2015. So that's a pretty rare move. So already they were setting up, you know, another, perhaps exciting and really tense decision. So it's now been three decisions in a row, if you count October, January, and last week, that MAS has tightened. And for longer run history, you'd have to go back to 2010, 2011 for a similar period where they tightened at three meetings in a row. So just to put that into context, that was when the economy was bouncing back from the global financial crisis. Now we're in, in some ways, a similarly tense time trying to head off these inflation pressures, but with different circumstances, of course.
Indeed. And I'd like to talk more about these inflationary pressures that are hitting Singapore and the region. But I do want to touch on that point, because you're right. The MAS is quite unique in that it doesn't target rates, but rather adjusts controls around the local currency. How unique is the MAS really when you compare it to some of these central banks across the region and the world? And why do you think the MAS has taken a different approach from, say, other central banks in terms of targeting inflation?
Yeah, well, it is very rare, but Singapore has to be this way. Being a small, open economy that's heavily dependent on trade, policymakers see the currency affecting inflation more sharply than elsewhere, than other central banks would. So that's why they've decided to kind of target the currency band rather than interest rate. One quirky thing to remember in all this too is that under this framework, interest rates can actually rise here when the MAS is loosening policy. So that's a reverse from the typical central bank action elsewhere, and just something that they have to deal with when they're kind of focused on keeping the exchange rate steady and keeping macro pressures kind of at a minimum. MAS officials do, periodically review these methods to make sure that they're the best fit for this economy, but so far, they found no reason to change their toolbox, as we mentioned, the three levers on the currency band.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because whenever you see somebody target a currency, there's always a threat of them being labeled a currency manipulator because of the approach, because it's so directly and explicitly saying, hey, you know what, we're going to adjust the settings around which the currency can trade. And of course, this could raise the ire of, say, the U.S. Treasury Department, for instance, and other areas.
That's right.
You know, is there a threat of them being labeled a currency manipulator? And perhaps the even bigger question here, should the MAS even care if they are labeled a currency manipulator?
Well, to answer the first part, they were kind of close to that threat a few years ago in 2019, right, as you might remember, with the U.S.-China trade tensions and the Trump administration really going hard on this currency manipulation report, which saw new criteria. It was a very tense time for a lot of economies. I thought that they might be called out. And Singapore was added to the so-called watch list. Now that, just to succinctly address that, the Treasury report adds economies to the watch list that have two of three violations. Singapore had a current account surplus and was intervening in its currency, of course, given the framework, even though they had a bilateral trade deficit with the U.S. So that third factor got them off the hook. But in general, I mean, that did put them kind of on watch. And while MAS takes those criticisms seriously, it seems there's no real threat of the U.S. or others taking action in that regard. I mean, it's generally acknowledged that Singapore does this not for unfair trade advantages, but to maintain stability. And it has, of course, a very different economy given its size and trade reliance. So I think Singapore also has helped ease those concerns from the U.S. Treasury by disclosing more details of its foreign currency intervention. But that is something that we will kind of be watching, especially as we get more of those currency manipulator reports from the U.S. Treasury, because I think their methodology is still a bit under debate and in flux.
Right. We're listening to Michelle Jambrisco, the senior Asia economy reporter for Bloomberg, here on In the Spotlight on Money FM 89.3. And we're talking about the MAS's decision to introduce that 1-2 punch with regards to combating inflation and tightening policy. Now, the idea, Michelle, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is by letting the Singapore dollar flex, the higher purchasing power can offset any inflationary pressures on these ordinary Singaporeans. But you do have other central banks doing the same, albeit with adjusting interest rate settings. The Fed, for instance, giving the greenback a bit of that lift. The Reserve Bank of Australia also looking quite hawkish. And we've seen the Aussie dollar suddenly build past parity in favor of them against the Sing dollar in recent times. Could expected strength for the Singapore dollar be blunted and thus also negate any of these inflation blunting effects based on what you've observed from these other major central banks in the world?
Sure. I mean, you've certainly hit on one of the conundrums of exchange rate policy and politics, especially right now with so many volatile factors in the global economy, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, COVID spread in China, supply chain bottlenecks, all of those, the latter two, at least, very acutely felt here in Asia and here in Southeast Asia. It could be a bit of a wild ride still to come, even though the MAS was seen as doing something that kind of helped stabilize markets in the near term. For now, though, they seem to have gotten what they wanted, as the Singapore dollar was rallied by the most in about a month after their announcement Thursday, and has reversed course only slightly since then. So, I mean, you have to play it by ear. You have to be on your toes. I think the MAS has certainly signaled that there's a high level of uncertainty, and they'll be on watch in the months ahead, hopefully with not another unscheduled meeting, but looking toward October, they'll certainly have to see a different world from where we are right now.
I do remember, Michelle, that you mentioned that Singapore, along with South Korea and arguably New Zealand now, have been on the forefront in the Asia Pacific region in terms of acting against these price pressures. Why do you think that is? Why has Singapore been a lot? Do you think that Singapore has been a bit more proactive than, say, some of their peers in the region?
Well, I think Singapore, like those other central banks you mentioned, South Korea, New Zealand, they're all a little. They have a little bit more breathing room on growth than some economies that need to keep growth squarely number one right now. I mean, I've also mentioned and pointed out that the other two economies that were joining South Korea and New Zealand early on in raising rates were Pakistan and Sri Lanka, and no one envies their situations right now. Obviously, that was for very different reasons, but it's also a matter of really needing to address inflation as a priority. South Korea sees it as, given that they're one of the most important trade powerhouses in the world, and given that China is its biggest trading partner, the Bank of Korea already has talked about seeing elevated price pressures for some time. They see the need to act aggressively and early. So that kind of came above any concerns they might have over growth recovery faltering. And for New Zealand, they're one of the central banks issuing what's been deemed a jumbo rate hike of 50 basis points alongside Canada, whereas typically the usual hike would be about 25 basis points. And they've done so because they've already seen prices there picking up at the fastest pace in 3 decades. But I would say it isn't an easy decision. I don't envy these central bankers, even for economy like New Zealand's. The big risk is that they crimp borrowing with interest rates so high and the housing market cools more than they're comfortable with. But for right now, though, at least in New Zealand's case as well, they see a bigger threat in not moving decisively and aggressively enough to reassure businesses and consumers about what costs will do in the months ahead.
Now, on the other hand, and this is just me taking a quick glance at the inflationary trends across Southeast Asia, central banks across the region may be said to be only acting against inflation now, and that inflation, while it's rising, hasn't really hit most of Southeast Asia as acutely as, say, the US or the EU. I'm a little curious, Michelle, and I'd like to get your thoughts on why you think there's been this arguable delay in inflation hitting the region vis-a-vis the rest of the world.
Right. Well, it's definitely showing up on Asia shores, but you're right, a bit of a different story from the US and the EU. And you'll hear a lot of policymakers here in Southeast Asia say that core inflation, which strips out food and energy costs, is still doing okay, and they can tolerate a run up in the headline for a bit longer. I think part of the story is that this region isn't quite as affected by the Russia-Ukraine triggered commodity price surge, except for India, of course, where the central bank governor, he recently named that factor as a key one for the RBI's newly hawkish stance. So, but as far as energy is concerned, you have Malaysia as a net energy exporter in this region. You have countries like Indonesia who are toggling with subsidies to offset those price pressures. So there's a little bit of a different story here, and that might be some reason for the delay. But and that at least also is a stark contrast to Europe, which remains so dependent on that Russian energy. So it's just a different basket of factors and impacts. And, you know, here in this region, we'll probably feel the China price pressures a little bit more than elsewhere, even though they will be affecting the global economy a lot all over the world. And so we'll probably start to see a lot more pressures come in from supply chain bottlenecks and other negative factors as an outgrowth of the COVID spread in China, which hopefully is brought under control quickly.
Right. And finally, Michelle, I do want to bring it back to Singapore and that inflation and inflation here. But when you look at Singapore's inflation breakdown over the last few reports or months, you've seen that arguably utilities and transportation costs usually have been figuring as the biggest drivers. And it's reflecting those surging energy prices made even worse now by the Russian-Ukraine war. Now, how effective can tightening policy be towards controlling inflation, be it whether it be raising rates or fiddling with your currency in controlling inflation, if the factors behind inflation may be largely external and out of our control? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think, it's important to remember it's also a confidence game. I mean, you're right that external factors are beyond our control. Everyone hopes the Russia-Ukraine conflict will be resolved soon, and that will allow this inflation to be a little less threatening. But this is where you have to remember that being a central banker is all about retaining the confidence of investors, businesses, consumers, and one self-perpetuating negative factor is inflation expectations. If they suddenly start to jump, people expect that they'll have to pay more, in the future. It feeds into this perception of inflation. It can be self-fulfilling. So, what central bankers need to do is act in a way that gives people confidence that the costs for things won't keep getting more and more expensive, and they'll put off all those plans to buy a house or buy a car. And if we go back to New Zealand, their jumbo rate hike was one way of signaling to everyone that they're taking this inflation threat seriously. They're going to manage prices in a way that those plans can stay on track, that people can have the confidence that they will pay their bills, that they'll be able to consume the way that they intended to, that businesses can keep up and running. So, and investors will see it as a likely good place to invest. So, really, it's a matter of faith as well. But it's all about walking the walk and talking the talk. And central banks have a lot in their hands these days to juggle.
Indeed, well said. I'd like to thank Michelle Jamrisco, senior Asia economy reporter from Bloomberg, for joining us today on In the Spotlight as we tackle everything about inflation and the MAS's recent policy decision. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
As always, I
wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times. And we look forward to next time you can join us on the show. Have a great rest of the week ahead.
You too. Thanks very much.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.